From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I recently hosted a shade gardening webinar featuring my friend Ken Drews, and the enthusiastic registration and the outpouring of audience questions that evening reminded me how popular a topic shade is, especially the challenge of dry shade. So that's our topic today with Ken as my guest. More in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook Small Gift Books Illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now.
Ken Drews is a familiar voice here at Away to Garden, one of my longest gardening friendships, and the author of 20 garden books, including The New Shade Garden, Creating a Lush Oasis in the Age of Climate Change. He gardens in New Jersey, mostly in the shade, which is our subject today. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm trying to stay cool.
Happy summer. I realized we should do a book giveaway of the shade book with the transcript of this show over on Away to Garden. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Since we're talking shade. And as I said in the intro briefly, we did a webinar a couple weeks ago and had like 800 people sign up. So I guess that says that people are interested. And so what was your take on it? Was it like every other time you've talked about the subject or any differences or what?
Oh, your perfect setup. No, it wasn't like it's been, because I've been lecturing on that book and people, as you said, dry shade is a popular question, but I think for the first time, people were talking about shade to make cooler places, to get out of the sun. And that book that I wrote, as it says, global climate change and global warming, is in the subtitle because that's what it's about. It's about planting trees and making shade and improving soil and trying to save water and things like that. But usually that's not what's talked about. But this time I got emails and people are talking about, oh, it's so great to make a cooler spot to garden. And it's so wonderful to have all these plants in a cooler spot. So I think this idea, you know, maybe it's because of the temperature.
Armageddon, you mean? It's because of Armageddon?
I was going to say, I hope so. Isn't that a terrible thing to say?
Yeah.
I hope that with fires and heat waves and record-breaking heats all over the world, that maybe people are starting to get it. And that book is mostly about how you can affect not only your garden, but contribute to the health of the planet by making cooler spaces.
And right.
Where I live, I still see trucks going by loaded with tree trunks. And I mean, you know, this is farm country and farmers don't like trees historically.
Here too, same things. Yeah. So as we also said, so many of the questions were about dry shade, about probably one of the most challenging environments gardeners face. And so, you know, I thought we could just spend a bunch of our time today talking about that, since there were so many, and if there was like questions about shrubs for dry shade and ground covers for dry shade and natives for dry shade. And of course, everybody always asks about, is it deer proof or is it deer resistant? And with that, because we could take 10 hours to talk about that, about Bambi and you know, Woody and Bunny and all of them. And with that, I think I'm just going to say we can mention any plants we know that happen to have those extra resistance. But maybe it's best to, like, I have some great resources on the website and I can give some good links with the transcript where people can really dig deeper into that. But yeah, so dry shade, tough spot.
Yeah, but there are, as you know, there are plants, and here in my garden with sandy soil, and we both of us have had kind of a drought for the last few weeks, although we did get a deluge this last week. But then even when there's a deluge, it kind of runs off and that's it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens if one day of rain isn't going to change 3 weeks of drought.
Right. So you said you have a sandy soil, meaning it's fast draining, meaning that it doesn't stay moist, correct?
Right.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So, right. So I have a lot of, and also I'm in a valley and there's ridges on both sides of the valley and there's trees, many of which I've planted to make shade. So I'm in a dry shade situation with a lot of plants. I mean, what do you think? You grow wild ginger?
Yes, I do.
That's pretty shade tolerant and drought tolerant.
So Acerum canadense, the native ginger.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good. This is a good test. I'll say the common name.
Oh, boy. Well, we're going to get about two or three plants, and then I'm going to have a moment.
No, it's funny because Brunnera, for example, which is one of my best dry shade plants. I mean, have you ever heard anybody say bug loss?
No, the common name, Buglosss, right? It's like, no.
Mm-mm. So we say Brunnera.
Yeah.
And I grow a little dwarf Astilbe chinensis variety Pumila. And Pumila usually means dwarf. It's a Chinese Astilbe that flowers. And for me, it's actually on rock. So it's really drought tolerant. I grow it all over the garden. So it's in a lot of situations, but it's drought tolerant and it blooms. Epimedium, that's one of your favorites.
Yeah, the barren warts. And again, not native, but great ground covers for a lot of purposes. And the funny thing about that one for me, and now I'm in the north, I'm in zone 5B, is that even though it's, quote, a shade plant or frequently marketed as such, I grow it also in full sun here in the north. That would not work in the mid-Atlantic or southeast or whatever. I'm sure it would burn up. But do you know what I mean? It can even be in sun here. So... And it's persistent in the almost semi-evergreen. So, you know, it's pretty durable in many ways and long performer, right?
So, yep. And when we say that they're shade tolerant, it doesn't mean that they all need to be in the shade. Some of them, as you're saying, can go from sun to shade, like that little dwarf Astilbe. I have it in one of my sunniest places too, and it looks just the same.
Right, right. And so adaptable is right. The thing. Adaptable, right. And there are many plants that are neither just dry nor just moist and neither just sun or just shade that, you know, that have more flexibility, that are real toughies. So
I grew Heuchera. Remember when Palace Purple came out, that Heuchera, that's probably 20 years ago. And I tried Heuchera, it croaked. I tried Heuchera, it croaked. And you'd buy these plants that were so lush and big. And then I was—I visited a garden along the Hudson River, and one side of the garden was this gigantic rock wall, and the Heuchera was growing in the wall. And so I realized this is a plant that wants drainage. So I've been growing Heuchera more recently in dry places, under a maple tree, for example, and at last it doesn't die.
Oh, interesting. So, now, so you're growing. Are those the Velosa types, the ones with like purple leaves and stuff like that? No, that's wrong. Those are the, I'm forgetting, is that Americana? I forget.
Americana and Velosa are both ones that I've had better luck with.
Me too, with the hairier leaves a little bit. Is that right? Is the leaf surface a little bit? Yeah. Yeah. Like that famous, what was the famous sort of ivory flowered one? There was a cultivar named of that. I want to say Bartered Bride, but I probably just made that up.
You can make them up. No one will know.
What is Bartered Bride? Where did that just come out of my head?
You're putting me on the spot.
Well, so we just have to tell people that if you garden long enough and get old, this is what's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. You're going to free associate, just like, you know, for the rest of us humans. You know how like a lyric of a song pops into your head? Well, what happens to me and Ken is a piece of botanical Latin or a common name pops into our head.
I've heard Bartered Bride, but we can't go that way.
We'll fix it in the transcript. Don't worry. I'll give a citation in the transcript if you want to know the secret answer.
I thought the name of one of the Heucheras that was doing so well, I know one of them's called Citronelle, and that's a gold one.
Yes.
And that's doing pretty well because some of the gold lime Ricky and things like that just didn't make it for me. But I thought the one that I was growing was sterling silver, and it's stainless steel. Now, how could I make that
whatever
mistake?
Okay, yeah. I always loved caramel, and they've improved and so forth. Beautiful. And I liked the first, the original one, and so forth. So yeah,
and that is a Velosa, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's another one where you took a hint from where you saw it succeeding in a preposterous spot and cracks in a wall, and thought, "Aha, drainage," and then extrapolated from there and made it happier.
Yeah, and I'm growing Japanese anemone hybrids, you know, the late summer beautiful yes. anemones, and I don't water them. They look great.
Yeah.
I never thought of that as a dry shade plant, but it is.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, I was going to say, you know, one of the people wanted to know about natives, and you can continue with your list, but people want to know about natives, and you know, that takes homework, but it is possible also. And, you know, I recently was kind of browsing around before we did our webinar, and for a New York Times article I was doing not long ago. And I found that wildflower.org, the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Society mm-hmm. Website on wildflower.org/collections, plural, you can filter the results among native plants by your state and then by conditions. So you could do your state, and then you could do shade or part shade and dry and so forth. And the list isn't going to be huge in most places. If you get to draw full shade, like 2 hours or less of light, and dry, you're going to get a small list, but it's a list nonetheless of shrubs, trees, perennials, et cetera. You can filter even further and just get all the shrubs or all the perennials. But so that's, you know, we have to learn as gardeners, especially if we want to delve into natives more deeply that are locally appropriate, we have to do some homework, right? And, you know, some, I noticed the area around Seattle, Kings County in Washington, the government website has a whole little mini site about native plants that are good for there. And they have, you know, ground covering plants is one of the groups of plants that they list a whole set of. And, you know, like vanilla leaf, do you remember that plant, Aclis triphylla, vanilla leaf? It has yeah. some fan-shaped foliage.
Right.
Like that turns out to be dry tolerant. Now, again, this sounds very esoteric maybe, but what I'm using it as a case in point is, if I lived in that area, even my local government now, because of climate change and so forth, is trying to showcase these better water-wise plants and, you know, climate-resistant plants and so forth, and is providing that information. So do the homework. You know, that's what Google is for.
When, right? When you said, yeah, I always think of Vancouveria. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, Vancouveria. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hexandra. Yeah, yeah.
I was talking about, mostly I was suggesting herbaceous plants and deciduous herbaceous plants, but we had a question about native shrubs.
Yes, the other night, right, exactly.
Right. And I made a little list of that, and I came up with Calycanthus, Florida, the Carolina allspice, Comptonia, sweet fern, if you've got acid soil, which I do not have. That's such a beautiful plant.
It is a beautiful plant.
Corylus americana, American hazelnut.
Oh.
Dyer villa lanicera. That became very popular. And I always think, where's the flowers? Because they're so tiny. But that's right. Another one. Hydrangea arborescens, a plant that has exploded with so many different varieties. And I imagine not all of them are really drought tolerant, but some of them are, especially the smaller ones.
So the smooth hydrangea, and that's a native to... Right? Certain parts of the country, right?
More than you think. If you look at a map, it's because they always say Midwest because of Annabelle, the most popular one, which came from, I think, Illinois.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and that's another one where if you want to know, is it, quote, native, which the tags on plants are ridiculous in the nursery because it says native if it's native anywhere in the U.S., which is not necessarily relevant to where you live. But again, that wildflower.org, you can search for any plant in there and it'll give you its native range as well as the states in which it's present, which is, you know, where it's present compared to where it began, where it originally was native, two different things, but it's very interesting. And they've gone to the trouble of creating all this information. We need to avail ourselves of it. Yeah. And get more knowledgeable.
If you go around Connecticut in rocky areas, you often see mountain laurel. And yes, you often see it in some shade and growing on rocks, because it too is drought tolerant.
Yes.
And here I have a weed, I shouldn't say it, it just comes up everywhere, Lindera spice bush. And yes, I think that takes almost any situation.
Right. It's sort of an edge of the woods, edge of the forest, you know, kind of a shady deciduous shrub. Wildlife value, great wildlife value, great fall color.
Do you grow any ruse, any sumac intentionally?
Yes, some, yes.
Because ruse aromatica, I had that on my list because it doesn't grow to like 30 feet.
So like Grolo, the cultivar Grolo or something?
For example, right.
Yeah.
I think the species only grows like 10 feet.
That's great for like a hillside too. Like a, mm-hmm. if you have an embank, a bank and you're trying to hold it and you know you want something that has multiple seasons of interest and is easy and is going to take over and kind of hold things in place, that's a great one.
I didn't know Taxus canadensis, American yew. Do you know that plant?
No idea.
Well, we'll have to do some research at some point. But those are some of the things that we were talking about. We really got into it.
Yeah, and I mean, you can go with sedums, for instance, some of the low sedums, you know, that are used to being, and you know, that makes sense. These succulents that sort of are used to in their native environments being baked in the, you know, and they're not plants that grow in the moist woodland or whatever. And some of those are, you know, want more sun than we're talking about, but there are some that are a little more tolerant. So, you know, doing the homework, I think. One that I came upon that I didn't know when I searched on wildflower.org and so forth, you know, for my state and states nearby, was the barren strawberry, the Wolstenia fragarioides. I hadn't thought about that plant in a long time, and it kind of has nice fan-shaped leaves. They're kind of toothed at the edges, and there's like, I think there's three leaflets on each leaf and yellow flowers, and that's a tough dry shade native plant. And you know, the native plant nurseries that propagate things do sell it, but you don't see it at the garden center. So that's one where you need a workhorse ground cover that's also going to add wildlife value. So I hadn't thought about that in a long time, that plant.
Yeah, you're making me think of another one I hadn't thought about that has yellow flowers, and I can't remember its name. And it was very popular at one point. A ground cover, dark green leaves, yellow daisy flowers.
Oh boy, he's testing me again.
It's got sun in the name, I think. Oh, I can't remember.
Oh my goodness. So I mean, lots of choices. And again, homework required in some cases, and you may not find it being showcased with all the petunias and calibrachoas and who knows what at your local garden center. You might have to do a little searching to find some of these things too. But so when you, in the webinar the other night, one thing that you showed is a really tough spot under, I think it might have, was it under a maple? I can't remember the tree species. Mm-hmm. And how you had, because at first things, newly planted herbaceous things need water in the early going. You had figured out a way to not necessarily have to drag the sprinkler out there every day for however long. And we should put the caveat also that we're not talking about digging holes under established trees with giant shovels or anything like that. We're talking about gingerly, tenderly putting in tiny little divisions or liners or plugs, as they say, or little bulbs or seedlings, mm-hmm. or et cetera. But you know, these things, new plantings, of especially little tiny things, while they get rooted, they need water. So what did you do in that case?
Well, you know, almost everything needs, you know, people think native plant, it takes care of itself. And they stick it in the ground and it croaks, because even if it's native and even if it's local, it really needs some help that first year. So when I did a little shade garden under actually a giant white pine, and I didn't cover the whole area, I just covered a part of the outer edge of the drip line.
Okay.
And I laid soaker hose, which is made out of recycled car tires. It's a porous rubber thing, and the water just oozes out. So I would run that for about an hour a day. And I planted just in among the soaker hose. So, and after a year, I stopped doing it. So it's there under the soil and the mulch. actually, when we had one of our floods, I found some of the soaker hose because it floated.
Oh, but that's the kind of thing, if you have soaker hose, that you could even pin down with some of those earth staples that you can use for Rime and so forth when you're covering a hoop, you know, hoops in the garden, like in your vegetable garden or something, to keep out insects or provide some shade. You could pin that soaker hose down temporarily in an area if you wanted to, and then remove
it. Oh, that's true.
Just so that, you know, people can remember, like, not to be afraid of putting in a planting that may need a little TLC, just turning on that soaker hose, you know, a couple times a week or whatever, is going to be a lot easier than dragging hoses around and trying to get the spray to exactly hit everything equally and so on and so forth. So snaking a soaker hose through. And again, those earth staples are great for, or whatever they're called, for, they look like big hairpins. So
landscape pins are
right. So in the last, so we had like 5 minutes, and we had a question that had nothing to do with the class, but came in, and it's sort of, I just thought it would be kind of fun to answer this one. It got me intrigued, from someone named Donald, a reader and listener. And he's in New Jersey, and he's moving in 2 years, to Pennsylvania between Philly and Harrisburg. And, he has a garden that he adores, and he wants to bring bits of it, and he doesn't want to destroy the garden where he is. He wants to leave it intact, but he wants to take, you know, bits and pieces. So he's already begun air layering a magnolia and a crab apple. And you know, he's going to make cuttings of willows and other things, and he's started some of his, you'd be proud of him, he started American persimmon and black gum and bald cypress from seed, and following in your footsteps, Ken. Anyway, he has a lot of ground covers and so forth as well. And he wanted to know, how would we advise him to do things in advance? And also, I mean, and this really applies to anybody who's planning on starting a new big bed. Sometimes you want to use your own stuff. Like you always talk about having a splinter nursery, like a nursery area, you know, so same kind of thing. When do we do these types of uprootings and so forth in advance of a new project?
I think you should have this person as a guest. I would say, you know, he's got 2 years. So I would say that after things, deciduous herbaceous things, drop their leaves in the fall or in the very early spring when they're about to put on new growth. And if it's a ground cover, he could just take a hunk of it, you know, like a little section of it.
Yes.
And put it in a flat, add a little soil around the edges. And if it's smaller, you could put it in a pot, just like it was a nursery plant, add some soil to that and make, just like you said, a nursery, lump all these things together. So you could put a sprinkler in the middle. Some things, if they're already growing, he probably should cut them back by about half if they're herbaceous.
So if you uproot them, cut the top growth back, you mean?
To compensate for root loss. Okay. If you think you've dug something and you know that some of the roots didn't make it, are still in the ground, then if you cut the plant back, it's going to probably survive a little better. And sometimes it takes them so long to get going again if they live. But if you cut them back, that's true with native plants too, cut them back to compensate for root loss. If he's got shrubs and trees that he wants to move, I would say water them in advance, like a year in advance, a tree, because I move things like trees all the time, which I know sounds crazy. But a year in advance, if you can take a spade and make and sort of do some root pruning in a circle around the tree, and then it'll make little feeder roots close to that cut that you made.
Okay.
And when you move it, we had a Elizabeth Less garden weeping cornus cusa that we have had for almost 30 years crammed in to a tiny space, and we moved it early spring before it leafed out, dug it up, took as big a root ball as we could and moved it, and it didn't miss a beat. And I'm surprised. We had a good spring, I must say, that was kind of cool and wet. But, you know, you really can move almost everything. We used to say trees have wheels.
Well, we're running almost out of time, but I wanted to say add one thing to those good pieces of advice for Donald, which is that, and you sort of hinted at it, you said flats. You said, you know, you put the divisions in a flat, like of ground covers and stuff, and let it fill out a flat. If you're using pots, use pots that are the same, all the same, that fit into a flat, like a grid, so that at moving mm-hmm. time, you know what I mean? Use 4-inch pots, for instance, that fit perfectly. I forget how many fit into a flat, but do you know what I mean? So that it's orderly, because at moving time, it's going to be a lot easier to move that than higgledy-piggledy, mismatched.
That's true.
Odds and ends. So I think that's the other thing, is to get the gear, and you can get that at a, you know, even A.M. Leonard or one of those types of, you know, places that supply nursery people. You can get flats, you know, a dozen flats and, you know, X number of, you know, 100 pots or whatever to make that.
Sure. And a lot of nurseries just toss these things. So you can.
Right. So you could also go and recycle. Exactly. Right. Ask for recycling.
I have one more thing to add too, which is Chrysogonum virginianum, golden star. I remembered.
So that's the other yellow flowered plant. Right. Okay. This is how it goes with people like me and Ken, guys.
You know, so, you stop thinking and then it comes in your head.
Totally.
And we stop thinking all the time.
Yes. So thank you for making time again today. And thanks for the tips. And like I said, we'll give lots of links with the transcript so that people can, you know, do a little of their homework, as we were talking about. And also, we'll have information coming up soon. We're going to do another in August. We're going to have another event, webinar pop-up event. And then in September, October, we're going to do Virtual Garden Club again. So we'll have info about all that as well. So thanks for making time. Talk to you soon, Ken.
Thank you, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, small gift books illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
And talk to you all soon again, too, I hope. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening in the shade or otherwise, meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.